From Muse by Clio and the Clio Awards, this is Tagline, the show about great ads and the people who make them. This week on Tagline.
Reverse a track high speed with the trailer. I thought it was impossible. Everyone else thought it was impossible, but it was possible with the new steering.
The truck drivers came to Volvo Trucks at night and they actually competed driving backwards. Like, that's how fantastic the new steering was.
It might be interesting to have someone doing the split. And then the second thought was, okay, who would do that?
Even if there could have been another person, it wouldn't have been the same. That is what creativity is about, right?
And then I actually had the art department with tape, with masking tape, literally tape the whole runway. They spent 4 days doing it. It had to be exact.
So I asked him, why aren't you driving as good as you do normally? And he says something like, you know, Sophia, it's not easy to have an action hero on the top of your truck.
The product demonstration, that most elemental form of advertising, is as old as time. But it returned in spectacular fashion a decade ago in a series of stunt videos for Volvo trucks, memorably showing off the vehicle's features. On this episode of Tagline, we'll revisit the so-called live test series with the agency, Forsman & Bodenfors, the director Andreas Nilsson, and the stunt coordinator Peter Pedrero. We'll look at why a B2B company with a small customer base wanted to make broadly appealing viral videos in the first place, how the early stunts were done, and how they made the epic split. The crown jewel of the campaign, with Jean-Claude Van Damme doing the splits between two Volvo trucks speeding in reverse. I'm Tim Nudd with Muse by Clio, and thanks for joining me for the story of Volvo trucks and the long road to some of the best product demos ever made in advertising. Season 2 of Tagline is brought to you by GSTV. For those of you who may not be familiar, there's a good chance you watch GSTV every time you fuel up. GSTV is a national video network that's had incredible growth, now reaching 104 million viewers a month with a unique one-to-one moment of attention. Think about it. What campaign would you run with that moment? On Tagline, we're discussing some of the most memorable spots in history. Imagine how those campaigns, or your next one, could be creatively transformed in context on GSTV. To fuel your next creative campaign, visit gstv.com/tagline. In August 2012, 10 years ago next month, Volvo Trucks posted a video on YouTube that would set in motion one of the most celebrated ad campaigns of its time. Made by the Swedish agency Forsman & Bodenfors, the ballerina stunt, as it came to be known, was truly crazy to watch. It showed two Volvo trucks speeding in parallel, a few dozen feet apart, along a highway in Croatia, with a professional slackliner named Faith Hickey attempting the dangerous stunt of crossing on a wire between them.
So the stunt we're trying to do is two Volvo trucks speeding down the highway towards a tunnel, and I have to walk across a line before they come to the tunnel. Because basically, if I don't finish walking across the line, the mid part between the tunnel will hit the line, it'll pop, and I will fall.
In the event that we do have an accident, it'll be myself or Robin that will obviously call for assistance.
So what do you think of this stunt?
It's crazy. Crazy.
I've highlined much higher than this before. I've highlined on longer lines, and I've highlined in harsher winds. But I've never slacklined moving forward before.
Too far apart, the rope breaks, too near together, she falls off.
I try not to let very much go through my mind. It's better to just focus on walking and getting to the anchor.
The director, Henry Alex Rubin of Smuggler, really ratchets up the tension before launching headlong into the action. 2.5 nail-biting minutes of Hickey struggling to traverse the wire. She's wearing an ankle leash for safety, and in fact, she falls at the beginning and has to grab the wire and pull herself back up. And by the end, it's like a full-on James Bond sequence, as Hickey leaps at the last possible moment onto the second truck, just as they reach a tunnel and the wire snaps behind her.
Hey,
While there was some Hollywood trickery involved, extra safety rigging painted out in post, along with some selective editing, the stunt at its core was real. And stressful, indeed, to pull off.
There was many ideas of how we would do it, obviously trying to keep the trucks together, but obviously having two trucks going with the winds hitting you quite fast. That was one of the main concerns that we first had.
Peter Pedrero was stunt coordinator on the project. He recalls the original idea was to have Philippe Petit do the stunt, the Frenchman who crossed between the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center on a tightrope without permission back in the 70s. But then they discovered Hickey and decided to feature her and this lesser-known sport of slacklining.
And the other thing was obviously to keep the tension between the trucks with the cable. And what we had one cable hardwired, and on the other side it went down over a pulley with a weight, the counterweight, which was obviously much, much more than what the person weighed. So if the truck did move out or went in, the tension would be exactly the same. As long as obviously the truck didn't go so far out that the cable would snap. But yeah, we did it for real.
The video, very Hollywood-like in its action and drama, quickly went viral upon its release, with millions of views and loads of stories in media. Quite the showing for a B2B company that to that point was better known for trade brochures than cinematic stunts. And it would kick off a whole campaign called the Live Test Series, with many more videos to come. But to understand the journey to this flashy new work, you have to go back to the beginning of the relationship with F&B, a creatively driven agency that actually wanted little to do with Volvo trucks when they first came calling.
To be very honest, I felt like it was some kind of punishment. It is a true story that we actually said no when they came and asked if we wanted to be their agency.
Sophia Lindholm was an art director on the Live Test Series and is now the agency's head of creative in Sweden.
And after lots of conversations and discussions and getting to know them, made us change our mind. But I mean, I'm not even a car person, and absolutely not a truck person.
Bjorn Engström wasn't a truck person either. A copywriter at the agency for almost 25 years by the time Volvo Trucks arrived, he also found himself suddenly and completely immersed in truck culture.
We really knew nothing about trucks by that time. So I think we had a full year just interviewing truck drivers, truck buyers, haulage companies, trying to find out about everything about the trucks.
They had to learn quickly. The client was about to introduce a new line of vehicles, its first major launch in two decades. And as they dug into the business, the agency uncovered two insights that would lead to a whole new advertising strategy. The first was that truck buying was way more emotional than it seemed, not just rational. And the second was that the drivers aren't the only ones involved in the purchase decision.
I mean, it's a work tool, but it turned out to be a very emotional work tool. Many times they're living this working tool for 5 or 6 days a week. So of course they care about which truck to drive. And then there was their second insight, I think, that was very important. Of course, if you ask a truck buyer who is taking the decision of buying a new truck, they would say, yeah, I'm doing that. But if you go a bit deeper, if you really talk to them, you understand that they are discussing this with their families.
It could be a dad or a brother or, you know, a mom or a kid talking to his dad about something that they had seen on YouTube. It's quite difficult to find, you know, the potential truck buyer out there. So, you know, the whole strategy was that we wanted people to start talking about Volvo trucks, and we wanted that to be any kind of person, you know, and finding that to be a relevant brand and a fun brand and something that you could talk to, you know, around a dinner table.
These two insights, one focused on the content, the other on media, were both very actionable. For starters, they would look at the brand through a more emotional lens, creating work that made you feel something. And then they would aim that work at a broader group of people, reaching the target customer by flooding the zone and appealing to the public at large. And they would get those eyeballs not by buying a ton of TV, which they couldn't afford, but by intentionally trying to go viral. A strategy that even then was derided by many as unpredictable and difficult to pull off, but which worked like a charm on Ballerina, with its gripping storytelling that was more like a movie than an ad.
I think we did talk a lot about, for the Ballerina stunt, the music and the more of like a Hollywood aesthetic to it. Are these tests even like advertising?
I mean, it was like a James Bond film with all the rigs and everything like that. When CNN called us after this first stunt and asked us how it was done, we could say honestly that it was done for real. I think that's one of the reasons why it was successful, because you had all this speculation. Was it done for real or it was just fake? And when we kind of communicated it was done for real.
The ballerina stunt reached more than 160 million people, earning 30 million euros worth of media and driving the target market to more detailed materials about the new trucks online. The agency and client were so pleased that they quickly expanded the campaign and drove headlong into a series of sequels. The following year, four more films were released, each of which had a fun hook. Literally so with the first, which showed the president of Volvo Trucks, Klaus Nilsson, standing on an FMX, seen hanging precariously from its front towing hook, high above the ocean.
This is a hook from the new Volvo FMX. Made of cast iron, and it holds up to 32 tons. That's far more than this, so you don't need to worry. In fact, you don't need to worry about anything. The new Volvo FMX is the most robust truck we've ever made.
A second film demonstrated the same truck's 11.8 inches of ground clearance by driving at speed over the 10.8 inch head of Volvo technician Roland Svensson.
We have a stiff plate protecting all vital parts, and we have positioned airspring members and air bellows higher up. This means 300 millimeter ground clearance, just a little bit more than my head.
A third spot showed off the truck's easy handling with a hamster who maneuvers it by running on the steering wheel. And a fourth, actually the most dangerous of all, promoted Volvo's remote monitoring service by showing an engineer, played by a professional street luger, fixing the underside of the truck while it's speeding down a highway.
I don't think you get the emphasis of how dangerous it was. I mean, the safety we did 100%, but as a stunt, you know, there's always that possibility that something could go wrong. We had a chain that went the length of the trailer. We had nudge bars at the back. We had a comm system. We checked the motorway like a forensic team before we started, obviously making sure that there was nothing that could obviously make him lose control underneath. We were going around 40 to 50 miles an hour on the motorway.
These four films did just as well as Ballerina, getting millions of views each when they rolled out in the fall of 2013, and really cementing Volvo Trucks as one of the world's most entertaining YouTube channels. Still, no one was quite prepared for what would come next in November, when the company unveiled its sixth, and by far its most famous, live test of all. The cultural juggernaut known as the Epic Split began, as all the live tests did, with research. The agency, from the beginning, had extraordinary access to Volvo's engineers to learn about the truck's features. And one new feature in particular was just astonishing to all involved.
One of the engineers said that, with this new steering, the Volvo Dynamic Steering, I could actually reverse a truck high speed with the trailer. I thought it was impossible. Everyone else thought it was impossible, but it was possible with the new steering. And then in that moment, I thought, this is it. We must do something with it.
Sophia soon found out something else that was weirdly thrilling on its own, almost too good to be true.
That truck drivers came to Volvo Trucks at night, and they actually competed driving backwards around the big house or the building. Like, that's how fantastic the new steering was. That's what he told us. And we just felt like, that's something that you don't hear often. Isn't it fantastic? It's such a fantastic story. It's almost unbelievable. But yeah, it was too good to just let go.
So they knew they had to do something with this dynamic steering. For weeks, they went around and around on ideas.
We should do it like a roller coaster, for example, or drive the trucks reversing in a velodrome. Very strange things like that, very complicated. But the Hollywood stunt director would always say, no, it's too dangerous, you can't do that.
I mean, as always, you come up with tons of ideas and lots of them are bad, some are good. And once in a while, one or two are amazing. One thing that we wanted to do was also to kind of do some kind of homage to the ballerina stunt, because that was also about the steering, the dynamic steering of the truck. In that first one, we were going forward, of course. But I think it wasn't until we got Andreas Nilsson on board, you know, that we finally got the idea put in place.
Andreas Nilsson was a commercial director known primarily for music videos up to that point. And it was Andreas who would have the spark of inspiration for a film that would be quite different than the action-packed ballerina-type ideas the agency had been circling around.
The original idea was a little bit more in that world, like with parkour actors doing something. But I just came up with this idea that it might be interesting to have someone doing the split. And then the second thought was, okay, who would do that? And then there's just one guy who's known for it.
That guy, of course, was Jean-Claude Van Damme, the Belgian action movie star, then 52 years old, who'd been doing the splits in films going back to the 80s. So much so, it was practically his trademark.
I mean, he's the Mr. Split. So he was the first one to call. And then we didn't really, when we were talking about, okay, if he doesn't pick up the phone or whatever, who's next? And we had all sorts of like ideas that was clearly not as good. So we really like put everything on one number. And agency did an incredible job of selling that into to the client, because I think it sort of like doubled the budget that they had, but they saw the potential in it.
The client, though, wasn't immediately sold on Van Damme. If the live test series had been a pivot from business as usual for Volvo, then the epic split was itself a pivot from the live test series. Using a celebrity, a more meditative tone, all of this brought new questions. Anna Kvennerstedt, a copywriter who's now chairman of F&B, didn't work on Epic Split directly, but did watch it all unfold, and recalls the client, understandably, getting nervous.
It wasn't obvious to use that type of celebrity as like an endorser of their product, right? I think we hear that a lot from clients these days. You don't want to get involved with celebrity that doesn't have like a super clean track record back in the day, and there were discussions about that. Is this like a good representative for our brand, kind of thing? Is a person who was famous back in the day and will everybody be able to relate? Is it something that is aspirational today? Kind of those kinds of discussions definitely happened.
Van Damme could also, in theory, steal the spotlight from the trucks. The creatives, though, saw this differently. All the live tests had multi-layered storytelling. Most people watched them for the stunts, but the truck drivers were also looking at the product. Van Damme wouldn't turn off the truckers, quite the opposite, in fact. They tended to love him. And if he pulled in more casual viewers, so much the better. In any case, the client did, in the end, approve the casting, and so the team approached Van Damme to come up with a plan.
I remember he invited us over to come down to Brussels to talk about it over a mussel soup that his mom would cook. But we never did that, which I regret a lot. It would have been fun. No, then we met up in Madrid when we would start shooting it. We went to a flamenco club that he's a big flamenco lover. So that was fun. I mean, the idea is very simple. So it's not that much to discuss there, but the technical aspect of it was, that was a lot of talk about that, you know.
As Andreas, Peter Pedrero, and the team at Folk Film began devising the stunt, which would have Van Damme do the splits between two FM trucks speeding backwards, the agency worked on framing the piece as a whole, with things like music, art direction, and voiceover. For starters, they debated what, if anything, Van Damme should say in the spot. They all felt it could benefit from something personal to him, a kind of self-appraisal that could appeal to his fans, and so they sketched out a VO, a few lines that sound autobiographical, but were written by the copywriter Martin Rehnquist.
I've had my ups and downs, my fair share of bumpy roads and heavy winds. That's what made me what I am today. Now I stand here before you. What you see is a body crafted to perfection. A pair of legs engineered to defy the laws of physics. And a mindset to master the most epic of splits.
Andreas recalls the VO copy being based in part on one famous movie monologue from many years before.
I think he could have worked without it. At the same time, like it probably works harder as an ad. with a bit of voiceover. And when Martin, who wrote it, we talked about like, what is he going to say, yada yada, and we looked at the scene in Apocalypse Now when Colonel Kurtz is, you know, when he's, that's how a snail crawl on the edge of a razor. You know, remember that? It would be nice if it had a poetic tone like that.
I watched a snail crawl along the edge of a straight razor. That's my dream. It's my nightmare.
In the end, the VO threads the needle in the same way the film as a whole does. Somehow both campy, yet reverential at the same time, leaving the viewer to decide for themselves how seriously to take it.
We wanted Jean-Claude Van Damme to talk about himself, make it much, much more interesting and trustworthy. We didn't want to make fun of him. I mean, he is a real action hero. I mean, he had some troubles in his career and he overcame them. I think this was the perfect timing for him to go out and tell about his career and his ups and downs and show the world that he was still there, alive and kicking and doing great things.
Talking about himself, not about the trucks, made sense, Sophia says, because they never saw him as a traditional spokesperson, which again enabled this richer, more multi-layered storytelling.
The trucks themselves are the spokespersons for the Volvo trucks because they did manage to do all the tests that we put them through. I think it's easy in a way to use celebrities or influencers, but it is really difficult to put them in a context where they're relatable or you know, understanding why that specific person is in that specific spot. And I think that's what we managed to do with Van Damme. And of course, for us, it was fantastic that he wasn't in a lot of movies at that time. I mean, not only because he wanted to be in this one, but he didn't cost us a fortune. Which I think that's also a big question in finding someone who could be right for the job, of course.
He loved the idea, and he was very professional. I think when you hear his voiceover, it's a really good performed voiceover too, talking to himself. I mean, of course, exaggerating. That's the whole idea of this film. Should be over the top.
And he was actually really nice. I think he was, in a way, a down-to-earth person. But he was kind enough to take selfies with everyone and write autographs. And I think he actually enjoyed it. I think he had a good time.
Another critical piece was the music. And Enya's Only Time turned out to be perfect. Lyrically, it worked well, with lines like, "Who can say where the road goes?" And it was also, in a funny way, a bit like Van Damme himself. Another somewhat campy classic of yesteryear, primed for a comeback. Andreas recalls only one other track being a possibility, and only briefly. Kenny G's cover of James Blunt's You're Beautiful.
But it just felt too ironic. We were looking for something that felt sort of poetic and emotional, but not pretentious. It needs to appeal to a truck driver first and foremost. And I was just kind of fantasizing about 45-year-old truck driver. What song could have been emotional for him? Like the first kiss on a beach on Mallorca, like Magaluf. What were they playing in the bar in the background that made him, you know, well up? And Enya came up. And then there is also some lyrical beats that is about like travel or like a journey. So it made sense. Enya is perhaps not the most credible song in the world, but somehow it touches you.
I have a very specific memory of the first time that Andreas showed us an animatic, I mean, way before we went on production. And I think that's a moment in time that we will never forget. Even if it was just an animatic and the trucks looked crazy and it was just a big blob where Van Damme was later going to be, together with that song, I think that gave us chills. And I'm really happy that we stuck with that song, you know, all the way to the end, because I think everyone got a bit scared somewhere in the process, thinking, was this right? You know, was this the right way to go?
We had a lot of opinions, and even at the agency, that we should have another type of music, but we were stubborn. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme, he was not the most trendy actor by that time. And Enya was been out of the charts for quite a long time. It was 80s music, and the combination of not being trendy at all, I think was a perfect combination.
Even here at the agency and people that we talked to weren't sure if we chose the song because it was a great song or if there was some kind of irony in the choice of that song. That was one of the reasons why it made it so great, because it didn't really matter. It didn't matter if people thought the song was amazing and that it made the film better, or if people actually thought that the song was too cheesy or, you know, too old and, you know, didn't fit the film. I think that whole discussion was one of the reasons why it turned out so great.
With all these elements beginning to line up, they soon faced the biggest challenge of all, actually filming this crazy stunt with the muscles from Brussels. After the break, we'll hear about the shoot in Spain, how the Volvo truck drivers struggled with the pressure, and how they had a very narrow window to get the take they needed. And later, we'll look at the spot's incredible rollout and the whole campaign's legacy today, a decade after launch. Once again, thanks to our sponsor of today's episode, GSTV. GSTV recently launched Amplify, a retail media network that helps CPG marketers reach consumers primed to spend in the last mile of the consumer journey. With 2 in 3 GSTV viewers shopping on the day they fuel up, Amplify is a solution for CPG marketers to ensure your campaigns are being seen and influencing your consumers' next action. To learn more, visit gstv.com/amplify. Volvo Trucks and its creative partners went into production on The Epic Split, the 6th film in their live test series, in the middle of 2013. But it would be 5 months before they were ready to shoot. There were many tricky things to work out: location, the logistics of maneuvering the trucks, practicing with the drivers, and of course, safety, building a rig for Van Damme in case he should fall, which in the end, he didn't. They did most of the practicing in England. At first, they planned to use so-called precision drivers, professionals trained for stunts, but they ended up using 4 actual Volvo truck drivers, a driver and a spotter in each cab. As Sophia Lindholm recalls, this was actually a repeat of what happened on the ballerina stunt.
And there we had the precision drivers, who had been practicing also many months before. But this was the first time that they actually set their foot in the real truck. And one of the precision drivers realized that the trucks weren't really all that set up inside. I mean, they were brand new, but it didn't exactly look like a truck with everything put into place. So he didn't dare to drive. So first day at set, I think we were 150 people or something on set. The precision driver just said, "I can't do this. I don't feel comfortable enough to have her on the roof and do this." So we didn't have a driver. We just had one driver. But then the Volvo Trucks driver actually came up to me and said, "You know, maybe I can give it a try." And he did. And he did it perfectly well. And he is in the spot as one of the drivers.
The Epic Split, though, brought a new level of pressure for these drivers to deliver.
So, you know, we didn't want to kill muscles from Brussels. So we did a lot of practicing. There is actually a fun story about one of the truck drivers who worked for Volvo at the time when they were practicing. And, you know, Van Damme had climbed up on the roof of the truck and then just practicing going backwards, of course. He didn't drive as good as he usually does. And now, after working with them for a couple of years, we know them pretty well, the truck drivers. So I asked him, why aren't you driving as good as you do normally? And he said something like, "You know, Sophia, it's not easy to have an action hero on the top of your truck."
Andreas Nilsson and Bjorn Engström both recall the question hanging over the whole process of whether they could actually pull off the stunt at all.
It's a Swedish thing called Jantelag. It's a cultural thing here where we always say, "This will never work." That's the approach. So they were all like saying before, "Yeah, good luck, this will never work, guys."
And we practiced and practiced and practiced. Because it's extremely hard, even with the steering, to do the split. You have to split in a very precise way. And actually, one of the truck drivers, I mean, he said, "You're crazy, guys. You can't do this. It's impossible."
In the end, of course, it was possible, as they would prove during the 3-day shoot in Spain at Ciudad Real Airport, a disused airstrip a few hours south of Madrid. The runway, long, smooth, and level, was perfect for precision driving, or so they thought. It turned out the surface was slightly graded to allow rainwater to run off, which made it more challenging. Peter Pedrero, who'd overseen the stunts going back to Ballerina, recalls the intense preparation on set, including marking the entire runway with masking tape to guide the drivers.
They spent 4 days doing it. And it had to be exact. So obviously, at every certain distance, they had to make sure that it didn't slightly veer off, because any slight variation, that means the truck would go wider. And obviously, he ended up hanging off with one leg. 24 seconds in, you'll see it comes in at about 24 seconds. And at 28, you'll see it blatantly. There's a red marker, which is basically red masking tape that I put across, which is when I would give the command for the trucks to basically start to pull apart.
They had 3 days to shoot, but in reality, much less time than that, since they had decided beforehand that it would be more ethereal and dramatic if they shot right at sunrise. This meant Andreas and the cinematographer Ed Wild had less than 20 minutes each day to get the shot they needed.
And then Ed, who was the DP, took this super serious. So we were there like 2 days before, like kind of at the right hour to kind of, you know, find the angles and, you know, find the pacing and rehearsing. Because we all knew there was, when we shoot the final thing, we have one, perhaps two goes at the right hour. And the window for that was like 6 to 6:18, and then it was over.
The rigging, meanwhile, included a wire to hold Van Damme in case he fell, as well as flat plates installed above the truck's wing mirrors to give him the footing to do the splits. Peter says the plates were intentionally not painted out in post to help prove that the stunt was real.
You can see them. They're like L brackets, which we had screwed on. So when he obviously starts doing the splits, it's actually on, you know, on two plates. So obviously his feet are flat. You can see them. There is a bit of rigging, a bit of safety, which obviously you don't see, but it was done for real. But that's as far as I'm allowed to say. It was, a little bit of safety we had. Not a lot, to be honest. It was just something, a concept that I came up with. But yeah, it was just a safety rig.
Shortly after 6 a.m. on the initial shoot day, with the sun peaking just above the horizon, the team embarked on their first take. They had an Arri Alexa mounted on a Scorpio Arm camera car. The exquisitely planned shot begins with a close-up of Van Damme, eyes closed, tops of the trucks visible behind him. His VO begins within a few seconds, and he opens his eyes as the camera pulls back. The narration wraps up at 30 seconds, and he begins the splits. At 45 seconds, the camera sweeps away and to the right, framing the trucks from an angle, as on-screen text explains the Volvo dynamic steering. The single-take shot took 77 seconds in all. They nailed it on the very first take.
What you see is a body crafted to perfection. A pair of legs engineered to defy the laws of physics. And a mindset to master the most epic of splits.
Who can say where the road goes, where the day flows, only time? And who can say?
I remember I was sitting in the car driving behind the camera on a rig, and there was maybe a little bit too little light. We were afraid we didn't have enough light, and we came out and the photographer said, "Oh no, it didn't work." And then we looked again and he said, "Yes, it works. We have enough light."
You know, the drivers did a remarkable job, and I have to say that they weren't stunt drivers. So who better to highlight that, you know, a truck driver can do this, you know, their drivers and their sponsors. And they did a remarkable job. If it would have been a truck, you know, flipping or whatever, it would have been stunts. But for precision driving, being that they drive trucks all the time and know them inside out, it was the best choice.
The team actually spent the next day shooting more footage in case the single shot felt insufficient. Though, of course, it didn't. Bathed in an otherworldly glow, it was perfect.
I think the aesthetics, if you do look at truck advertising, is way different from what we did for Volvo Trucks. So I think that was extremely important for us, to make it not look dark and not rough, and, you know, and that goes for the music as well. And then we were lucky, you know, the weather was exactly the way we had hoped, and we got that specific take and, you know, that second basically when the sun rose. So it was a lot of planning and it was a lot of intent, but we were also lucky, of course.
I always imagine it to be a single take. That was sort of, it's like a visual poem like that, but sometimes you kind of have to see it to believe it. And there was some hesitation around that. Perhaps it might get boring and you don't want to cut and, you know, make it more like an action sequence. So we spent a second day shooting inserts of wheels spinning and shit like that. There actually was an edit with all that in, but thank God we didn't do that. But everyone in the end saw what it was and appreciated for what it was.
Viewers did as well. The epic split was released online on November 14th, 2013, and immediately went viral globally. The YouTube video, which is still live today, got 10 million views in 48 hours and now has 115 million views. Actually, just a fraction of the total, as it was copied so many times. Media stories extended the reach exponentially, and the work also later cleaned up at the award shows. The live test series, including Epic Split, won a total of 10 Clios in 2014, including 5 golds and a grand for Best Integrated Campaign. The work also won 3 Grand Prix in Cannes in film, cyber, and creative effectiveness, the latter for boosting sales by a remarkable 24%. For its creators, all this was, of course, surreal. They knew they had made something special, but never expected success on quite this scale.
I mean, we were sitting, staring at like YouTube, counting views, being all shocked, of course, you know, now these many millions have viewed it and people are saying this.
We had no idea it would become crazy at the internet, but we have planned for a viral success. So every third week we release a new live test, and every time we got more and more views and more likes and more comments and a lot of PR. So it was carefully planned for the viral hit with Epic Split. It was not by pure chance, but of course, I mean, you can never plan for a success like that.
It was sort of a once in a lifetime. All the spoofs and I don't know, have you seen all of that? I'm just happy no one have died. Somewhere like in Russia, some crazy guy drove down the street on 2 Ladas and they went back, you know, and it just looked like totally dangerous. And I saw another spoof from, looked like Bangkok or something, someone just blasting down the street on 2 mopeds really fast doing the same thing. And they didn't have a wire, I imagine. I knew it was going to be very well received. We shot it and I cut it together with the music and I showed it to the truck drivers just to show them what they've done and how amazing it was. One of them started to cry when he saw it. And when that happens, like, it's like, okay, mission accomplished. You know, like that was all you could ever dream of, you know, that sort of reaction. And of course it's because they were so nervous and they worked so hard. It's like an athlete achieving something. So it was a lot of tension that went away when he saw it actually worked. It was a really beautiful moment. So already when that happened, it was already a success to me.
As mic dropping as it was, the Epic Split wasn't the end of the road. The campaign continued and later included, most notably, a wonderful film called Look Who's Driving from 2015, showing a 4-year-old girl piloting a Volvo truck via remote control, gleefully crashing it through an obstacle course. And as recently as 2020, Andreas Nilsson reunited with the agency and client for a film called The Tower, very reminiscent of the early work, showing 4 Volvo trucks stacked on each other, with the company's current president, Roger Alm, on the very top. But it really was those first 6 films that defined the campaign's essence. Sophia, Bjorn, Andreas, and Anna all carry slightly different lessons with them from the work. But what unites them is this pursuit of the unexpected, how they came at the client's problems in a unique way, and how, at a certain point, beyond all the research and the strategy and the smart, rational thinking, you just have to take that leap into the unknown, the creative gamble that can uncover something new.
And, you know, when you are a little bit in doubt, I think maybe take that as a sign that it is something new. I think it's so easy to look at what others do and try in a way to do something similar. I think always try to think in the opposite direction. If we have done this for quite a time and it might be successful, still let's, you know, push ourselves to do something differently and try to do it in another way. I mean, it's been so much fun because this is a spot that so many people have seen. I mean, people who don't work in advertising and have no clue that I work in advertising, I mean, I've managed to be in situations where people just talk about the epic split and say something about it. And that's fantastic, of course, to see that it did actually manage to do some of the things that we have hoped for.
My first lesson, I think that advertising is boring. Everything that looks like advertising, sounds like advertising, is not a way to forward. I mean, you should leave advertising behind and try to go into pop culture or into art or do something totally different outside the box. That my second learning was that you have to leave your good taste behind sometimes. To go into pop culture means that a lot of what you think is low key, trying to stand out in an advertising block where everybody's shouting to be very low key, it doesn't work. And those good taste and everything you learned from your advertising career might be hindering you from doing new things in a new great way. Don't be afraid of competing with Hollywood, I would say.
It's really focusing on what the message is and just remove everything else. And really, really brave client and agency. And also try and make something that is not a copy of whatever popular ad was that came out last month. Because it's like now, that's always mind-boggling to me that you see so many projects that try to look like that cool thing that they did last month. It's sort of fascinating that the echo is so obvious. If you run an agency, it's almost like you would do as an experiment, force people not to be able to, not to watch YouTube for a year or watch, you know, just think for yourself and see what comes out.
In my experience, clients are always more happy when they have been given something that they maybe wasn't really picturing from the start or didn't see themselves doing necessarily. And I think this is an example of a moment like that where it actually was really, really important to stick with this idea. Even if there could have been another person who could have managed to do the split in the same manner, it wouldn't have been the same. Why are we working with creativity? Well, we believe it's powerful. We believe that we can come further through creative ideas than we could by just being smart about things. And so in an example like the Epic Split or the whole live test series, I think that what you can see is that, yes, you can make something like that happen to a fraction of the cost of a traditional campaign. That is why what creativity is about, right? It's actually getting further for less. So it's a proof point that we keep using that, and I hope other agencies do that as well. You know, this is what creativity can do.
You've been listening to Tagline, the show about great ads and the people who make them. Thanks to my guests this week, Sophia Lindholm, Bjorn Engstrom, Andreas Nilsson, Anna Kvennerstedt, and Peter Pedrero. Tagline is a production of Muse by Clio, the content division of the Clio Awards. This week's episode was edited by Lane McGibney. Our theme music is by Brian Englishman. Thanks to the creative agency Gut for helping us promote the show, and a special thank you as well to our sponsor, GSTV. For more about Tagline, and to watch the ads we talk about on every episode, visit taglinepodcast.com. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you use to listen. I'm Tim Nudd. Thanks for joining me, and we'll be back soon with another new episode of Tagline. This episode of Tagline was brought to you by GSTV. Every day, millions of Americans get in their vehicles and go. Fueling drives commutes, commerce, and connection. And that's where GSTV has the undivided attention of 1 in 3 adults every month. GSTV's national video network owns a unique moment for innovative storytelling, when consumers are engaged, taking action today, and influenced for tomorrow. Fuel your next creative campaign with GSTV. To get started, visit gstv.com/tagline.